I stand and dust my pants, giving the place one last look. The garden isn't as perfect as it was in memory. And neither was she. She was impatient. She could be spiteful for small reasons. But she was a girl, not even 17. And she gave the most she could, did the best she could with what she had. That's why I will always love her. And it's why I know whether or not she would give her blessing for what I go to do. My heart can't stay here in this cage she herself has fled. It must move on. Chapter 48. The Magistrate. Mine Magistrate Timony Au Paginas waits for me flanked with a coterie of grey mine guards, now wearing their best and brightest uniforms. One carries a platter of cheese, dates and Paginas's best, and perhaps only caviar. Ugly Dan is gone.
Lord Andromedus, is it not?
Paginas croons with that supercilious inflection uppity copper's favour. He is fatter, his hair thinner, and he sweats like a pig in heat as he fans open his heavily ringed fingers to favour me with a queer bow popular in the H.C. political dramas.
I was examining the ore compression facilities,
probably a whorehouse in nearby Yorkton at the edge of the Tiger,
when news of your visit came to me. I hurried back as best I could, but still I beg your forgiveness. I wonder, though, may I be so bold as to ask the purpose of your visit?
So he can sell the information to men like Pliny? Coppers rarely mean all that they say.
An inspection is not due for...
In polite society, it is considered rude not to introduce yourself, copper. I talk like a peerless, not the pixies he so eagerly emulates.
My apologies,
he stammers in alarm, sweeping into a bow so deep I fear he might touch his nose to the floor, were it not for the cushion of his substantial gut.
I am Mine Magistrate Timony Au Paginas, your humble servant, and may I say, if it is not too bold,
he's still bowing,
your aspect is grander than I had indeed expected. Not to say that I did not expect you to be broad and tall. The Arch-Governor is only the best of the best in his employ, naturally. But the H.C. does you the barest justice.
You may stop bowing. He straightens self-consciously and peers behind me into the garden, fiendishly seeking the reason someone like me came unannounced to his mine.
As I know you've no doubt heard from others, the mine magistrates were overjoyed to hear the planet had been liberated from Bellona control. War, those men may know, but mining? Pah, amateurs.
They don't know war either, apparently. Swallowing, he glances again to my razor, and then to the garden.
A beautiful space, is it not?
He asks.
It reminds me of my time on the Pyrrhus River. The tulip blossoms there. Oh, the colour! Nothing like it, as I'm sure you know. And the trees, aren't they so very like the birches that stretch along the steps of the Olympus Mons? I stayed there at the Chateau Le Breu.
He makes a strange, expansive motion with his hands.
I know, but sometimes one must treat oneself. In fact, it is where I discover the most unique Soto Cenere cheese.
He smiles proudly.
They call me Marco Polo, my friends, because I relish travel. It's the culture I seek. Refined company, as you could no doubt guess, is the damnedest thing to find around here.
I don't know how long he would continue trying to impress me, If I didn't look at his men's best uniforms, then at his best rings, and frown.
"Is something the matter?"
he asks. "You're right," I say. His beady eyes scurry back and forth between his best greys, searching for signs of the inequity I noticed. It disgusts me how desperate he is to please me. This man stole from my family. He had me whipped, watched Io be killed, hanged my father. He's not wicked. He's just pathetic in his greed.
"I am right about what?"
he asks, blinking at me. "That it is impossible to find refined company in places like this." My eyes fall so heavily on him, I fear he might burst out crying. Seeing him, seeing Dan, does nothing but fill me with a distant strangeness. I wanted them to be terrible, hideous monsters. But they aren't. They are petty men who ruin lives and don't even notice. How many others are there like them? In a panic, Boginus waves to the cheese plate.
"Sotto cenere, my liege. It's an Italian import with notes of licorice, winks of nutmeg, a dash of coriander, a sprinkling of cloves, and a playful but mysterious bit of cinnamon and fennel coated onto the rind. I'm sure you'll find it to your..."
"I did not come here for cheese."
"No, no, of course not."
He looks around nervously.
"If I may beg to ask, what did you come here for, my liege?"
I begin walking. Virginus hurries to keep up. "Ragnar." I nod to the Titan, who pulls a small datapad from his pocket. Took Pebble less than an hour to teach him to use it.
"Your output of helium-3 has decreased by 14% over the last quarter. Your projections show an expected shortfall of 13,500 kilos for the current fiscal quarter. Greater Andromedus wishes you to explain."
Virginus doesn't know what to do. He looks back and forth between me, the obsidian, and the datapad. He stammers a response.
We have had issues with the populace. Graffiti, illegal pamphlets."
He addresses me.
"You know we were the nucleus of the Persephone movement."
Ragnar taps him heavily on the shoulder.
"Breeder Andromedus is busy."
Boginus wheels about. In a nightmare he doesn't understand and cannot escape.
"I forgot what I was..."
"You were making excuses."
"Making excuses? Making excuses? How dare you?"
He squares his shoulders.
"There's a current of rebellion running through Mars. Not a mine has been untouched by dissent. My mine is hardly the exception. There have been killings, sabotage, and not just from the sons of Ares, from the miners themselves."
Boginus turns to me again, desperately sensing his demise is fast coming, feet struggling to keep up with our long strides.
"My liege, I've gone above and beyond in following the proper method of quelling dissent, as laid out in Section 3, Subsection A of the Department of Energy's Guide to Mine Management. I have docked their rations, cracked down on enforcement of legal violations, and discredited leading thought-makers by luring them into liaisons of homosexuality. I have even introduced the recommended scenarios from On Diffusing Rebellion. Over the past 6 years, I've introduced plague and cure, rebellion and suppression, natural disaster, pit viper migration, and even considered the extraplanetary government upheaval package."
Panting, he waves imploringly for me to stop.
"No man would have done better than I."
"Your position is not in jeopardy," I say. He shudders with relief. Suddenly his head snaps back.
You wouldn't!
He leans forward.
You're considering quarantine, aren't you?
Why shouldn't I quarantine this mine? I continue on down the corridor till we reach the landing pad where my ship waits. There I stop. As you said, its populace has failed to respond favorably to strategies endorsed by the Department of Energy and the Board of Quality Control. Why not pump the air full of Uckley's 9 gas and replace the unruly Reds with clans from compliant mines nearer the equator?
No!
He actually grabs me. Ragnar doesn't even bother threatening the fat man. Choose your words carefully, I say.
My liege, don't do it.
Tears sparkle in his greedy, panicked eyes.
My mine's profits may have decreased, but it is still viable, still functional, a model of how to weather a storm.
You are its savior, I say, mocking him.
The Reds here are good miners, the best in all the world. That is why they're wild. But they've calmed now. I've increased their rations of alcohol and increased pheromone circulation in the air units. They're breeding like rabbits. I've also had my gamma plants tamper with their machinery and maps. They think the mines are drying up. They'll walk on pins and needles, fearing they won't make quota. Then we'll fix the machines, and they'll be filled with fresh purpose. I can even tell them that terraforming is complete, and migration will begin in 10 years, and that Earth has begun sending immigrants. There are still so many options before we must accede to quarantine.
I watch the man as he sputters to an end, slumping down, lifeless as a wet shirt on a hanger. Is this all for his own vanity, or does he really care for Reds? This was a test to see. Now I can't tell. He might actually care in some strange way. Another monster from my past made human by society's lash. Your mine is safe, for now. Maintain your workforce. Increase rations beginning tonight. I want happy workers and flush coffers. In my ship you will find provisions, food and libations. Throw the Reds a feast.
My liege? A feast? Why?
Because I said so. I sit alone in the viewing room, watching the celebration unfold through the glass beneath my feet. Thousands of Reds drink and eat as the young dance around the gallows to The Ballad of Old Man Hickory. The tables are filled with foods these Reds have never tasted, drinks they've never downed. And though they laugh, though they dance, I cannot find any joy myself. They live in horror, but it's one they know. It's one they can find refuge from. Will there be any refuge left when the sons of Ares reveal the great lie? It will shatter their way of life. They will be lost in the greatness of the worlds, and they'll be polluted by them, like I am. I recognize nearly all of them. Boys I played with, now grown. Girls I once kissed, now with children. Nieces, nephews, even my brother, Kieran. I wipe the tears from my eyes, lest someone see. A boy sweeps a girl into a dance after kissing her cheek. I'll never be like that boy again. My innocence is lost. And Reds will never accept me as one of their own, no matter what future I bring them. I'm not a conquering hero. I'm a necessary evil. I have no place here, but I cannot leave. There are things that must be said, secrets that must be revealed.
Still trying to create a cult? She asks from the door.
I turn to see Mustang leaning against the metal frame, hair in a ponytail, high-collared Politico uniform open informally at the neck.
I suppose I should commission statues next, yes? I ask.
Ragnar is scaring the backcountry greys.
Good.
You're so mean to greys, she laughs. Something you don't like about them?
She runs a hand through my hair as she comes to sit on the arm of my chair.
They're too obedient.
Ah, so that's why you like me.
She digs her fingernails lightly into my scalp, teasing.
Statues are a bad idea. Too easy to deface. Vandals could give you a mustache or breasts at their leisure. Risky proposition, breasts.
Could be worse.
Well, there's nothing worse than a mustache. Daxo is trying to grow one. I think it's meant to be ironic. I'm not sure.
Mustang laughs lightly as she settles in on the metal chair next to me.
His sisters will sort that out.
She looks around at the mine and the can.
Place is disgusting. I wrote a piece of legislation that the reformers plan to put through after all this. It'll gut the Department of Energy, restructure the Board of Quality Control.
She looks around the pot.
Change the way this meat shop is run. You see the supply stores in this place? Food enough for 7 years, yet they keep maxing out their requisition orders.
I took a look at their files.
The mine magistrate's skimming off the top, likely reselling the supplies on the black market.
Lying copper thought we wouldn't notice, probably because some gold or silver told them they'd greased the right palms to make sure no one ever quibbled. All while he has a malnourished population.
Corruption everywhere.
She wrinkles her nose and flicks a piece of flaking paint from her chair.
Why are we here? She asks. Did something happen with my brother?
This is the mine where the girl sang the forbidden song.
I say after a moment. Her eyes open wider as she scans the crowd beneath.
These poor people.
She watches me, waiting expectantly for what I have to say. But there are no words left, only something to show. I take her hand and stand. Come with me.
Chapter 49. Why We Sing.
I've never felt fear like this. Lycos is dark at night. Lights all turned down so the reds don't go mad from eternal day. Somewhere the night shifts weave silks, mine soil. But here in this wide tunnel, there is no motion, no sound except the murmur of HCs showing old terraforming hollows and the hum of distant machines. It's cool here, yet I sweat.
Mustang is silent beside me. She has not spoken since we descended in our grav boots to the commons floor, ghost cloaks making us nearly invisible to the lingering drunks slumped over tables and sleeping soundly on the gallows steps. I hear the tension in her silence and wonder what she thinks. My heart runs wild in my chest, so loud Mustang has to hear it as we enter Lambda Township, where I grew from boy to man. The place is smaller, the ceiling lower. Rope bridges and pulley systems like children's toys.
The HC that once glowed with Octavia O'Loon's face is an ancient relic. Pixels missing. Mustang peers around. Cloak deactivated. Her eyes dance from bridge to bridge to home, like she's seeing something wonderful. It didn't occur to me a gold would ever find interest in a simple place like this. I climbed the stone steps to the bridge that leads to my old home, just like I did as a boy. Only my limbs are too large now. I forgot I had grav boots. Mustang doesn't use hers, either. She follows behind and dusts off her hands as she makes the landing where the thin metal door to my old family home has been cut into the wall. "Darrow," she says so quietly, "how do you know where you're going?" My hands tremble. "You told me to let you in." I look down at her.
"I did, but..."
"How far do you want to go?" I know she feels what's coming. I wonder how long she's felt it. The strangeness of me. The odd mannerisms. The distant soul. She looks at her hands, stained red from the dust of the stone stairs.
"All the way."
I hand her a holocube. "If you mean that, press play, and come in when you've finished watching. If you leave, I understand."
"Darrow?"
I kiss her one last time. Hard. She clutches at my hair, sensing that when we part, something will be different. I find myself pulling back. My hand cups her jaw. Her eyes, closed, begin to flutter open as I step away and turn to the door. I push it open. I have to duck to enter. The home is cramped, quiet. The first floor is the same as I remember. The small metal table has not changed. Nor have the plastic chairs, the small sink, the drying clay dishes, or mother's prized tea kettle that heats on the stove. A new rug covers the floor. It's the work of a novice. Different boots sit where Father used to place his, at the base of the stairs, where I used to set mine.
"Wait. Those are mine.
But tattered and worn more than they'd been in my day. Were my feet really so small?" Silence guards the house. All sleep, except her. The tea kettle hisses as the water reaches a boil. Soon it begins its breathy murmur. Feet scrape over the stone stairs. I almost run out of the room, but terror roots me to the spot as she comes closer. Closer till she's in the room with me, pausing at that last stair, foot suspended, forgotten. Her eyes find mine. They never leave. Never look at the rest of my golden form. I panic as she says nothing. A breath. 3. 10. She doesn't know me. I'm a killer in her house. I shouldn't have come here. She doesn't recognize me. I'm a lost gold, poking his head in out of curiosity. I can leave. Run away now. My mother never has to know what her son has become. Then she finishes her step and comes toward me,
gliding. It's been 4 years. She looks 20 older. Lips thin, skin loose and webbed with lines. Hair worked through with sooty grey. Hands tough as oak and gnarled as ginger roots. When her right hand reaches for my face, I have to kneel. Her eyes still have not left mine. Now they let out tears. The tea kettle screams on the stove. She brings her other hand to my face, but it's unable to open and touch like the other. It remains twisted and clenched, like my heart. "It's you," she says softly, as though I will disappear like a night vision if she says the word too loudly. "It's you." Her voice is different, slurred. "You know me," I manage desperately. "How could I not?" Her smile is twisted, left eyelid sluggish. Life has been less kind to her than to me. She's had a stroke. It breaks me to see her body fail her, to know I wasn't here for her, to know her heart was broken. "I would know you anywhere." She kisses my forehead. "My boy. You're my Darrow." The tears leave warm paths down my cheeks. I let them linger. "Mother." Still on my knees, I throw my arms around her and let the silent tears come. We say nothing for the longest time. Her scent is of grease, rust, and the musty tang of Himanthus. Her lips kiss my hair, as they used to. Her hands scratch my back as though she remembers it just as broad as it is now, just as strong. "I have to take the kettle off," she says, "before someone wakes and sees you like..." "Of course. You have to let go of me." "Sorry." "I do," laughing at myself.
"How?"
she asks me, standing there looking at the sigils on my hands, shaking her head.
"How could this be? Your accent, everything."
"I was carved. Uncle Nerov saved me." "I can explain." She shakes her head, trembling so slightly, she must think I can't see it. The kettle shrieks louder.
"Take a seat."
She turns her back to me and takes the kettle off the stove. She sets out another mug, one from the high shelf. I remember it was my father's. Dust covers the moulded clay. She pauses, saying nothing as she cradles it close, slipping into a moment not meant for me, where she remembers those mornings when they would ready for the day together. With a long breath, she drops the loose-leaf tea into the pot and pours hot water after.
"Would you like anything else? We have those biscuits you liked."
"No, thank you."
"And I took my portion from the feast tonight. It's delicate gold food." "Did you do that?"
"I'm not a gold."
"There are beans, too, fresh from Leora's garden. You remember her?"
I spare a look at my datapad. Mustang is gone, heading back to the ship after she watched the holocube. I feared this. I read a message from Severo.
Stop her? He asks.
Two choices. Let Severo and Ragnar catch her, and contain her till I can speak with her, or trust her to make her own decisions. But if I trust her, she could leave, tell her father what I am, and it could all end. Yet she may just need time. I've given her so much to digest. If Ragnar and Severo capture her prematurely, it may set her against me. Or they may act on their own and kill her. Cursing silently, I type a quick reply. I remember everyone, I say to my mother, looking back up. I'm still me. She pauses at that, still facing the stove. When she turns, a lopsided smile crosses her stroke-ravaged face. Her hand fumbles one of the mugs, but swiftly she recovers.
Got something against the chairs?
She asks sharply, noticing I saw the clumsiness of her hand. Other way around, I'm afraid. I hold up the chair. It's better suited for a gold child than a peerless scard who stands just over 7 feet and weighs as much as any 3 reds put together. She chuckles that dark chuckle of hers, the one that, as a child, always made me think she'd done something particularly sinister. Gracefully, she folds her legs and sits on the ground. I follow, feeling gangly and clumsy here. She sets the steaming cups between us. You don't seem terribly surprised to see me, I say.
You talk funny now.
She pauses so long I wonder if she'll continue.
Neral told me you were alive. Failed to say you'd gone and dipped yourself gold, though.
She sips her tea.
I bet you've got questions.
I laugh. I thought you'd have more.
I would, but I know my son.
She eyes my sigils.
I'm more patient. Go on now.
Neral. Is he...
dead?
Aye, he's dead. The breath goes out of me. How long?
2 years ago.
She chuckles.
Fell down a mine shaft with Lauren. Never found the bodies. Why the hell are you laughing? Your father's brother was always the black sheep of the bunch.
She sips her tea. It's still too hot for me.
Suppose it makes sense he'd be as hard to kill as a cockroach. So I'll believe he's dead when I see him in the Vale, shifty bugger.
She speaks slowly, like most reds. The lisp from the stroke is faint, but always there.
I think he left this place and took Lauren with him.
The way she says it makes me know she understands there's more beyond the mines. Perhaps she doesn't know the whole truth, but she knows a part. Maybe my uncle and cousin aren't dead. Maybe they left to be with the sons. What of Kieran? Liana? Dio.
Your sister is he married? Lives with her husband in Gamma Township in the house of his family.
Gamma? I sneer.
You let her...
I stop as soon as I see the fresh twist in my mother's mouth. I might wear the trappings of a gold, but I better shut the hell up about her daughter.
She's got two girls that look more like you than her, or any gamma I've ever seen. And Kieran's well.
She smiles to herself.
You'd be right proud of him. Not the snivelling child you might remember, squabbing up his chores and talking in his sleep. Man of the house. Head talk for the crew after Nerol slipped down. Cora, his wife, died in childbirth, though. He took another a few months back.
My poor brother. And what of Dio? Dio's parents?
Her father is dead. Killed himself not long after you tried the same.
My head sags. So many deaths. She touches my knee.
It's the way of it.
Doesn't make it right.
It was a hard time after you and Dio left us. But Dio's well. Fact, she's upstairs.
Upstairs? What do you... Did she marry Kieran?
Aye. And she's pregnant. I'm hoping for a girl, but with my luck it'll be a boy who wants to dodge pit vipers and steam burns his whole life. If he's got the choice, that is.
What do you mean?
Things are tough. Changed. Mine isn't given the way it ought. Some of the men are whispering this corner of the world is all used up, and it makes them start fearing. What happens to the miners when there's nothing left to mine? They're hoping the terraforming will catch on before we run through our helium deposits.
Nothing will happen to you. I promise I will protect this mine, no matter what.
How?
I just will.
My turn.
She eyes me over her tea.
Where you been, child?
I don't even know where to start.
With Eo's death, I think.
I flinch. My mother was always blunt. Made Kieran cry his way through his childhood. But that bluntness makes calluses out of blisters, so I owe her a reply in kind. I tell her everything, starting with the moment after Eo's death and ending with the promise I made to the Arch-Governor. Our tea is long gone when I finish.
That's quite a tale,
she says.
Tale? It's the truth.
They won't believe you, the rest of them.
You do, though.
I'm your mother.
She takes my hand and runs her crooked fingers over the sigils that run from the back of my hands up my forearms, smirking when she reaches the metal wings embedded on the outside of my forearms.
I never liked Dio,
she says quietly. I twist my head up to look at her.
Not for you. She could be manipulative. She kept some things from you.
I know about the child, I say. I know what she told Dio on the scaffold. Mother scoots closer to me, her hands grasping mine and bringing my knuckles to her lips. She never gave much comfort. She's awkward at it now, but I don't mind. Father loved her for the same reason I do. Everything she does, she means. There's no falseness to her. No deception. So when she tells me she loves me, I know she means it, with every part of her.
Ea was not a cruel girl, you know that,
she says, pushing back so she can look into my eyes.
She loved you with everything she had, and I loved her for it. But I always feared she'd make you fight her battles. And I always feared how much she loved to fight. That's not quite the Io I remember. But I don't find fault with my mother's words. I can't. All eyes see their own way. But in the end, Mother, Io was right about this. About gold. I'm your mother. I don't care about what's right. I care about you, child. Someone has to fix all this, I say. Someone has to break the chains. And that someone is you. Why is she doubting me? Yes, it is. I'm not being foolish. I can lead us out of here. Out of slavery. To where? To the surface. She speaks of it familiarly, as if she's known the truth of Mars for years, not minutes. Perhaps she has. Where we will do what? All we know is the mines. All we know is how to dig, how to harvest silk. If what you say is true, and there are hundreds of millions of reds on Mars, how will there be enough homes for us up there? How will there be enough work? Most won't leave the mines, even if they know. You'll see. They'll just stay miners. And their children will be miners, and their children's children, except the nobility, will be lost. Do you think about these things? Of course I do. And you have an answer? No. Men. She rubs her right temple. Your father was one to jump without looking. Her expression tells me what she thinks of that. Helldivers all think they provide for the clans. No, the women do. She gestures around. Everything you see, made by a woman. But you know how to shape the world, don't you? Know how it should be. No, I don't, I say. I'm not the one with the answers. Mustang is. Io was. Mother is. No man or woman has all the answers. 1,000, 1,000,000 bright minds will be needed to answer what you've asked me. That's the point of this. What I can do, what I am good at, is tearing down the men and women who would keep those minds shackled. That's why I'm here. It's why I exist. You've changed, she says. I know. I pick dust from the floor and rub it between my palms. The dust looks strange on these hands. Do you think, is it possible to love two people? Before she can answer, feet pad down the stairs. My mother turns to look. Grandma? A small voice says sleepily. Grandma Dunlow isn't in bed. A small child stands on the stairs, nightshirt scraping the floor. One of Kieran's. She's 3, maybe 4. Born just after I left. Her face is heart-shaped, red hair thick and rusty as my wife's. Mother looks back to me, worried how she'll explain my presence. But I activated my ghost cloak as soon as I heard the noise. Oh, he probably snuck out to cause trouble, my mother says. I squeeze her hand before sliding back from the room toward the door. My time here is at an end, yet I linger. The little girl gingerly steps down the stairs, 1 foot after another, rubbing sleep from her eyes. Who were you talking to? I was praying, child. Praying for what?
For the soul of a man who loves you very much.
Mother touches her nose with the finger.
Papa.
No,
your uncle. Uncle Darrow. But he's dead.
Mother picks the girl up in her arms.
The dead can always hear us, my love. Why else do you think we sing? We want them to know that even though they're gone, we can still find joy.
Cradling my knees, she turns to look at me as she takes the first step up the stairs.
That's all they want for us.
Chapter 50. The Deep. Mustang is gone. I'd hoped she would come in, but I suspect that was too much to ask. Of course it was. Idiot. I remember thinking this would humanize me in her eyes. Thought meeting my mother would make her weep and realize we're all the same. The guilt falls fast on me. I handed Mustang the hollow of my carving, expecting... Expecting what? For her to come inside. For her, the daughter of the Arch-Governor of Mars, to sit on my floor with my mother and me. I'm a coward for coming here. I'm a coward for letting the hollow speak for me. I didn't want to watch her process learning who I really am. I didn't want to see the betrayal in her eyes. 4 years of deception. 4 years of lying to the girl who has never been able to trust anyone. 4 years and I tell the truth when I'm not even in the bloody damn room. I'm a coward. She's gone. I check my datapad. The radiation tracker Severo insisted on sticking her with before she came to see me in the POTS observation room says she is 300 kilometers away and moving fast. Severo's ship pursues, awaiting my orders. Ragnar and Severo both hail me. I don't answer their calls. They'll want me to give the order to shoot her down. I won't. I can't. Neither understands. Without Mustang, what is the point to all this? I wander from the township, down and down into the old mine, trying to forget the present by finding the past. There, I stand alone listening to the call of the deep mines. Wind wails its way through the earth, mournful in its song. My eyes are closed to the black, heels planted in the loose soil, head looking down the maw of darkness that stretches deep into the bowels of my world. This is how we tested our bravery as youths, standing, waiting in the deep hollows our ancestors dug in the times before. I turn my left arm to see the inside of the forearm where the datapad rests. Hesitating, I hail Mustang's. It chimes directly behind me. I freeze. Then the Scorcher battery pack whines as it activates, and warm yellow light blossoms behind me, illuminating a swath of the huge tunnel. Hands where I can see them! Her voice is so cold I hardly recognize it till it echoes back to me from the tunnel walls. Slowly, I raise my hands. Turn! I turn. Her eyes glow against the lamplight like an owl's. She's 10 meters away, higher than I, feet planted on the sloping, loose soil. In one hand she holds a light, in the other a scorcher, one that's pointed at my head, finger against the trigger. Her knuckles are all white. Her face is an impassive mask, and behind it, two eyes filled with fathomless sadness. Severo was right.
She'll shoot you in the head, you bloody damn fool!
Severo sneered at me in the shuttle.
Sometimes I think he joined my little crusade so he could have an excuse to curse like a red.
Ragnar stayed silent when I told them my plan.
"Then why'd you back me up with your father?" I asked him.
"Because that's what we do.
She has to make her own choice."
"And she'll choose you over her race?"
"You did."
"Oh, come off it. I'm not a bloody queen of the gulls, am I?"
He held his hand high.
"She's been up here her whole life. Air is nice and sweet."
He lowered his hand.
"I've been kicking shit since I was born tiny and butt-faced to my lard of a father. Your girl..."
"There isn't a chip on her shoulder."
"She may spout pretties when the world isn't hard, but when facing the masses who would steal her palace, trample her gardens..."
"It'll be a different girl you see then."
"You're a red,"
she says now to me.
"I thought you left."
"The tracker left."
She flexes her jaw.
"Severo was sneaky. Didn't even notice him doing it.
But you...
you'd never tell me something like...
this...
without an insurance policy." "I ditched the clothes and the shuttle."
"Why did you come back?"
"No. No."
She cuts the air with a gesture.
"You answer my questions now, Darrow. Is that even your name?"
"My mother named me after her father."
"And you're a red?"
"I was born in the house you stood outside.
It was 16 years before I saw Sky, so yes, I'm a red."
"I see."
She hesitates.
"And my father killed your wife?"
"Yes. He ordered Eeyore's death."
"When you sang the song to me in the cave, all this was going through your mind? This place, the carving, the plan, was all inside you, all in your memory. This whole other world, this whole other... person."
She shakes her head, not wanting me to answer that.
"Then what happened? Eeyore's husband was hanged? You were hanged? How did you escape?"
"Do you know why they hanged me?" She waits for me to explain. "When a red is hanged for crimes of treason, the body may not be buried. It is to decay and rot in front of all, as a reminder of what comes of descent." I jab a thumb at my chest.
"I buried my wife, so they hanged me too.
Only my uncle fed me himanthus oil. It slows the heart to make you appear dead. He cut me down after, gave me to the sons."
"And they..."
She holds up the holocube, her face pale in its glow.
"Did this to you?"
I was paler than a blue, a head shorter than Severo, weaker than a grey, knew less of the world than a pink learning art in the garden. So they took what was best in me, in my people, and melded it to what was best in yours.
"But it's impossible. The Board of Quality Control has tests,"
she says, breaking her cool line of inquiry.
"Lie detectors, DNA analysis, background checks."
She laughs in realization.
"That's why you came from the family Andromedas, born to gold parents who fled debts to try to strike at rich asteroid mining."
"Their ship was lost as they returned after the mines had been bought by Quicksilver."
"So sons of Ares destroyed their ship, altered the records, and purchased the mines so they could write your story?"
"Perhaps." I hadn't put much thought into how Dancer did it. "My friends are resourceful."
How did you even survive the carving? She mutters. It's against physiology. What the carver did to you. No one could survive that.
The sigils are connected to the central nervous system, and the implant in your frontal lobe can't be removed without rendering you catatonic.
My carver was a unique talent. He managed to find a way to remove two implants, though another carver did the second.
Two? There's two of you?
Severo, she guesses.
Is that why you've always been so close?
No. It was Titus.
Titus? The butcher? You were in league with him?
Never. I didn't know who he was until after I defeated you. Ares thought we would work together, but Titus was a monster. The goals made him that way.
And that excuses what he did?
Don't act like you know what we went through.
I snap.
I know, Darrow. I don't avert my eyes. I know the policies. I know the conditions your people suffer. But that doesn't excuse the murders, the rapes, the torture he committed.
It's what we suffer every day. Titus did what he did out of hate, out of a misguided hope of revenge. In another life, I could have been him. Mustang searches my eyes.
And why weren't you in this life?
My wife. I look up at her. And you.
Don't say that.
Voice thick with regret. She takes a step back, shaking her head.
You don't have the right to say that.
Why not? You always wondered what ran beneath the surface of me. Know the deep current.
Darrow.
Titus had pain, but that's all he had. I had something more. Io's dream of a world where our children could be free. But I would have lost it if I never met you. I take a step forward.
You kept me from becoming a monster, can't you see?
A gesture trying to encompass my desperation.
I was surrounded by the people who had enslaved mine for hundreds of years. I thought all golds cruel, selfish, murderous. I would have caved to revenge.
But then you came, and you showed me there was kindness in them. Broke, Severo, Quinn, Pax, and the Howlers proved it too.
Proved what, exactly?
That this isn't about my people against yours. You aren't gold. We aren't red. We're people, Mustang. Each of us can change. Each of us can be what we like. For hundreds of years, they've tried to tell us otherwise. They've tried to break us. But they can't. You are that proof. You're not your father's daughter. I see the love in you. I see the joy, the kindness, the impatience, the flaws. They're in me. They were in my wife. They're in all of us because we are human. Your father would have us forget that. Society would have us live by its rules. I take another step toward her.
You told me I gave you hope that we could live for more after we won the Institute our way. Then you said I turned my back on that idea when I accepted your father's patronage and went to the academy. But I never turned my back, not for one moment.
Another step.
You will destroy my family, Darrow.
It is possible.
They are my family, she shouts.
Face collapsing into grief.
My father hanged your wife. He hanged her. How can you even look at me?
She shudders out a breath.
What do you want, Darrow? Tell me. Do you want me to help you kill them? Do you want me to help you destroy my people?
I don't want that.
You don't know what you want.
I don't want genocide.
You do, she says. And why not? After what we've done to your people, after what my father did to you,